They try and sell it as a trip to Disneyland. It's going to be great. You're going to love it. You're going to have the best time you've ever had in your whole life.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello, I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Welcome to episode 57 of the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. My goal is always to empower you and your family to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. We're back this week with a new episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa. Seeing a loved one struggle with a health condition can be very concerning, but if in an attempt to help them, we rush in and put them on the defensive, we may never be able to help them accept the help they need. Today, Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, we'll share tips and techniques to help you help them no matter where they are in the disease progression. In case you're new, Christy Turner is a regular guest here on the Alzheimer's Podcast. She's a certified dementia practitioner, certified dementia care unit manager, and cognitive stimulation instructor. She has run award-winning memory care communities in assisted living and skilled nursing levels of care. Using her 17 years of experience in working with over 1,200 people living with dementia and their families, she's developed a system that helps families move from crisis management to confidence. Christy, getting someone to accept help. I've tried this in my own personal life and really screwed it up. And that had nothing to do with anyone's cognitive help. I was just trying to point out my loved one's struggle and I put them on the defensive, I pissed them off, and from there on out, I don't think she would ever listen to me. So I'm really looking forward to you sharing your tips and strategies to help people figure out how to get their person, their neighbor, their coworker, whomever, their friend to accept help.
Well, I think you got us off to a great start because you already shared what not to do. So we're already headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
But you bring up a great point, Mike, because if we're kind of relying more on instinct rather than a strategy, sometimes we can end up putting people on the defensive, which of course not only isn't what we want to do because we're not going to be successful, but it's not what we mean to do either.
Right.
And I know we're going to talk about this more in a future episode, but you know, the thing I think that is so important, and our listeners know this because I preach about it all the time, is the energy that we bring to every interaction. And we're always aiming to bring the good stuff. I call it the good stuff, and that's respect, kindness, love, empathy, and compassion. And where I see a lot of families end up kind of tripping on this particular thing is they try first with persuasion. Like, so we're talking about a cognitively impaired person, and let's say that they shouldn't be at home alone, right? That they need to have someone with them to just kind of be there, make sure that they're safe because they're cognitively impaired and their judgment isn't what it used to be. So we don't want our person opening the door to strangers, right? So in that type of situations where I see families get tripped up is they'll say something like, well, you know, the doctor said, da 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 da, you know, and we'll go through the whole, we went to the doctor, you got the diagnosis. And what the family's doing is using reason and logic. And the problem with that is, well, number one, it's kind of our default mode as grownups. But number two is we're talking to a cognitively impaired person. So that ability to use reason and logic is one of the first markers where we are starting to see cognitive changes. So by the time we're feeling that, you know, and observing the evidence that our person needs help, we're using reason and logic, and that means that their ability to use that is pretty much gone already. So we can't use something that is that our person is incapable of using.
Okay. And Christy,
I feel like that was really convoluted, but
no, it was clear.
Okay, good.
So Christy, in your example there, you mentioned that, hey, they've already been to the doctor. So are we assuming that in this situation, they've already received a diagnosis of some form of dementia?
Well, I was just using that as an example. Typically, in my experience, families wait a couple of years after their pretty undeniable symptoms before they're able to get that diagnosis. And it's either because for us as family members, it's so emotionally devastating to think that this is happening that we kind of try and talk ourselves out of, you know, okay, well, I'm seeing these changes, but it must not be true, because if it is true, then that would be really awful and bad, and I kind of don't want to deal with that. Not that we say that consciously to ourselves, right? Or we're on board. We're like, okay, I got to get my person to a doctor. But again, it goes right back to what we're talking about. How do I get my person to agree? How do I get them to accept help?
Okay.
And using reason and logic is not typically going to work. So, and again, it's because that's one of the first areas of the brain that's affected. So if we kind of cross that off our possibilities list, like, okay, reason and logic is not going to work, then the second thing that I see happen quite a bit is families will try to sell whatever it is, in this case, accepting help. Let's say have a caregiver come into the home. They try and sell it as a trip to Disneyland. It's going to be great. You're going to love it. You're going to have the best time you've ever had in your whole life. And so they're like trying to sell all of the benefits, right? Which on the surface doesn't seem like a bad idea. But again, that's using reason and logic. And so we can kind of unintentionally turn into like insurance salesmen. And if we have insurance salesmen in the audience, not trying to throw you under the bus, but you know what I'm talking about, like the stereotypical, right? I'm not listening to anything you have to say. I'm just pushing my agenda. Actually, come to think of it, that's just a bad salesperson.
Right. And when reason and logic doesn't work, then we get frustrated, and then our bad energy comes into the picture, and
exactly.
It probably pushes the person farther away and makes this a much more maybe contentious kind of a situation when that wasn't our intention at all.
Exactly. And it goes right back to how you opened the show, Mike, with what you were, the experience that you had. So instead of doing all of that, let's just, you know, skip past those scenarios and go to what actually has the best chance of working. And so I think, you know, number one is just what is your ultimate goal? Get clear on that. So if, for example, your person needs 24/7 supervision, then either someone is going to come into their home and be with them 24/7, or they're going to move to a place where they have 24/7 supervision, right? There aren't any other options. Those are the two options. So when we're clear in our own head, like this is going to have a certain outcome, and I don't want it to be awful, you know, getting to that outcome, but this is the goal and I'm going to get there, then that shifts our mindset to help us have a little bit more steel in our backbone and be really focused on, okay, I'm going to employ all the tips, tricks, tools, techniques that I can possibly think of and learn about in order to make this happen. Because the other thing is with the frustration is that we can unintentionally alienate someone because we're going about it in the wrong way and then end up throwing our hands in the air going, well, you know, I tried, but there was nothing I could do.
Exactly. That's what I did.
Not an option.
That's right. Exactly what I did.
Yeah.
I gave up.
So that's not ideal. Instead, when we look at, okay, we're very clear on our goal, and we'll just stick with, you know, accepting home care as our example for this. So we're clear on what the goal is. Now, when it comes to accepting in home care, there are a few different ways we can go about it. So it's going to depend on your person. And this is where you bring in your expert status as, you know, the expert on your person. And where your person is in the process. So if they're very early on in the process, they don't need 24/7 supervision typically, right? And so it might be something that's helping you feel better. But in either case, if you can frame it as something that is going to give you peace of mind, and this is your parent that we're talking about or your grandparent, you're typically going to be quite a bit more successful more quickly, because parents like to, you know, they want their kids to feel good. They want them to not worry about things. They want life to be a bed of roses. So when we frame it in a way of, you know, I really need your help with X, my friend Janie is visiting from out of town, and, you know, she's looking for places, or she has some time on her hands. She wants to be helpful. She's part of a pilot project, whatever the situation is, right? Whatever cover story, so to speak, is going to work in that situation. We want to go with that. So in other words, don't make it weird. I had a client who needed in-home care in order for his wife to have some peace of mind and be able to do her own thing. And his son worked in a really busy place, and so his caregivers were introduced to him as friends of his son. And he didn't give it another thought. And they went out and did fun things and tasks and errands together and just hung out. And he had a great time, and he thought of them as friends up until his very last breath. So. And that was a situation where the family really thought, this is going to be pretty much impossible to make this happen, to get him to agree to it. It wasn't impossible at all. It was quite easy. So again, just knowing what your end goal is and bringing that feeling of, I'm going to be successful into it, rather than, oh my God, I hope this doesn't completely blow up in my face, and being really anxious about it.
So, Christy, in that example, I'm trying to picture the son and his dad. He had the in-home care people show up at the house, and then he introduced them to his father as his friends, and then they
just... No, the son wasn't even there. The son was actually at work.
Oh, okay.
The in-home care just knocked on the door, and of course, the wife knew they were coming.
Okay.
But just knocked on the door and said, hey, I'm Joe. I'm a friend of your son Bobby's. I met him at this thing, and he said, you know, hey, my dad's really into golf. You should, you know, stop by if you've got time to play golf. He'd love to see it. Oh, any friend of my son Bobby's, that's a friend of mine. Come on in. Sure.
Okay. Okay.
And it was just off to the races.
And do these people show up in scrubs, or are they just dressed in street clothes? Or?
No, and that's another big thing there is, think about, for any of us, if we see somebody in scrubs, that sends a signal to us that it's some type of medical issue, right?
Right.
And as we've talked about before, you know, like 80% of people living with dementia don't know that they have dementia. They're unaware of it. So either their brain is telling them everything's okay, and that condition is called anosognosia, or they've forgotten that they have dementia. In either case, telling somebody who's living with dementia that they have dementia when they're unaware of it is not helpful.
Right.
Because that here's a piece of information we can do nothing about, but which make you very sad if you're, you know, aware of what dementia is. So it doesn't do anything to be helpful, right?
Right. It does not improve the situation at all.
No, not even one little bit. So I always recommend for in-home care, with my clients, at least, that people are wearing street clothes. They don't need to wear a name badge. Most in-home care companies, though, have some type of journal or log that they're mandated to keep.
Okay.
And so We have found unobtrusive places. You know, that's a conversation that we've had before the in-home care actually started, so that we were able to figure out what would be a good place where one care from shift, you know, the day shift knows where the night shift left it and is able to track that. That's all good. But it's not something that needs to be like, you know, in the middle of the dining room table. In-home care, wait a minute, why is their binder here? What's going on? Because people can read pretty far into the process.
So Christy, you say we want to have a goal. We don't want to try to use reason and logic and sell this as a trip to Disneyland, as you say, although that would scare me away. and make sure our cover story is I don't forget how you said the cover story, but that just, what can you kind of?
Yeah, use your insider knowledge of your person,
right?
Your expert status to come up with a scenario that is going to work for your particular situation.
Okay.
So, you know, like I was saying with my client, his son had a lot of friends, met a lot of people through work. And so that was how home care would introduce themselves.
Right. And you might have to sit and ponder this for quite a while to really come up with that strategy, right? And try a couple different things and keep trying.
Well, I hopefully it doesn't take a long time to,
right.
You know, figure it out. But one thing that I would suggest if you are feeling kind of stuck on this point is get out a piece of paper and a pen and just start dumping all the info you know about your person. And I don't mean like, you know, the day they were born, like, you know, their birth date. Okay, that's, of course, you know that, but do they love coffee? Do they hate coffee? You know, what will they do anything for a voodoo donut or that type of thing? Start writing all that out. You will start to see pieces of information that you can use. Not only that, it will be really helpful for any caregivers that are involved in the situation later. They're going to go, wow, this is a treasure trove of stuff. So that can be really helpful.
Okay. And I'll put a link to my person-centered profile that I created that'll help people think, and it'll help you come up with thoughts or ideas on this. I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
I had totally forgotten. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem there. So Christy, you know, getting a loved one to accept help, what other scenario might our listeners be trying to get them to accept help with?
Typically, in my experience, it centers around personal care, having someone with them, like the scenarios that we just talked about, and then driving and moving. Those all seem to be the big ones. And those all center around the fact that somebody is losing their independence because the dementia process is progressing. And so they are struggling with being able to manage those tasks themselves. But sometimes it can happen before that where we're noticing that our person is having difficulty, say, with paying their bills. They have plenty of money in their account, but the water's getting shut off or the lights have been turned out because they have forgotten to actually pay their bills. Or they have food in the house, but not anything you can actually make a meal out of. So those are some things where we first start to notice changes. And so maybe you want to hire a yard man, or you want to have a housekeeper come in, or a meal delivery service, that type of thing.
Okay. Let's walk through a scenario that I'm thinking of where, you know, because a lot of this, you mentioned the loss of independence, and that happens to a lot of us, people as they age, whether they have cognitive decline or not, because of mobility or eyesight or hearing. And I remember someone who the gentleman had, you know, we do yard work, right? Not to be sexist, but we tend to be the guys, especially the older generation, out doing the yard work. We've been doing it for 50, 60 years. And now all of a sudden someone's telling us, hey, I want to hire a someone to come over and take care of your yard. Well, that's not going to go over very well. So maybe in that case, we have our friends show up also and help out, huh?
Yeah, you can have your friends show up. It can also be a gift.
Okay.
So here's a scenario where you say, like, my mom is very much into gardening and just has, she's an amazing gardener. So in that case, if I wanted to get somebody to help with that, I would say something like, you know, hey, I saw this special that was running, and I know you've kind of been wanting to make some changes and kind of do some subtleties, and I thought this would be a really fun thing for you, and you can, you know, tell them exactly what you want and direct them. And so she's still in charge, but it's somebody who's doing the actual work.
Okay. And in that instance, you might have to shop around a little bit, right? To find someone that's kind of sensitive to the needs of your parent.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And then if it's for more indoor things, like you want somebody who can do some meal prep or light housekeeping, that kind of thing, I would go right back to in-home care, which many people don't know. When they hear in-home care, they're thinking, oh, somebody who comes and helps with showers and, you know, incontinent care and that type of thing, which of course they totally do that. But they also have a level of care called companionship care. And this is great for people who do need just a little help with some light housekeeping or some meal prep or maybe trips to the store or to an appointment. Fantastic, because those people almost always show up in street clothes, whether you tell them to or not, and as opposed to a uniform. And again, when our person is the one who's giving direction, when it's made clear to them that they're actually in charge, that can go a long way toward alleviating any type of, I think it's fear that's at the bottom of it, right? Because that loss of control and loss of independence. And many people, it's funny because as family members, because we don't want to see it happening, so often we delay getting some supports in place until somebody's a little further along in the process, which is actually when it's harder to do that. So if we do it a little bit earlier, where just some support would be helpful, then our person actually is usually more accepting of it, as assuming that we, you know, have the conversation in a positive way. Because they can see the benefit of, yeah, then I don't have to use all my energy on vacuuming and mopping and dusting. I can have this girl come in and do it, and I can use my energy for going to church or going to my granddaughter's volleyball game or, right, the fun things, things that people like to do rather than, you know, chores.
Some of the, you mentioned driving and moving, and those are very significant life changes that we're trying to help our person get help with, if you will. We talked some about helping a loved one move and transition, and I think maybe that could be another topic. Obviously, that's a big topic, and maybe that's something we want to have for another day, but those are both pretty big examples. And do you have resources on your website for those?
I do. I have, there's one post is how to know when it's time for memory care and then how to make that move into memory care. And then I also have an ebook that I've written about driving. Okay. As far as like, how do you know when it's time to intervene? And I looked all over the internet for, because it was a question I got so much. I was like, yeah, how do you know, right? And so I ended up ultimately just putting a quiz together myself that would help families determine, like, when is it time to intervene about driving?
Right. And we did a little mini series on knowing when it's time to intervene, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well for our listeners.
Yeah, great.
So, Christy, any other strategies coming to mind that you'd like to share with our listeners about how to help your loved one get help or accept help?
Yeah, I think another really key piece of this is to, you know, I'm talking about our mindset, right? So the energy that we're bringing into it. But if we're also very clear on the fact that as much as we would love it to be a conversation that goes something like, hey, mom, you know, I'm noticing that you need some help around the house. So I hired somebody to come in and help you. And her name's Janie. And she's going to be here in about 10 minutes. Sound good? Oh, thanks, honey. Love you. Okay, great. Love you too, mom. As much as we would love for that scenario to happen, that is basically unrealistic. So if we can kind of let go of it going that way, let go of the idea that that's how it's going to happen, and instead realize the likelihood is this is going to need to be a process. And as people who feel like the bearers of bad news, of course, we want it to be a one and done as quickly as possible, like blurting bad news and then running. But if instead we're looking at it as kind of an ongoing process, that's probably going to be better. And again, this depends on where your person is in the process, right? So if they're very early on and they're aware of their diagnosis, then we want to have a continual open line of communication. And this is going to be a series of conversations about, and they're going to be very involved in coming up with a plan for their future. So, and that's another benefit of an early diagnosis. If your person is already far enough in the process that they're not aware that they have a diagnosis or they've forgotten, then instead, probably we want to look at, instead of turning it into a big long conversation, we're probably going to need to step up and make decisions and then execute on those decisions. So if I know that my mom is not safe to be by herself and she needs 24/7 supervision, I need to make that decision about, is it going to be in-home care? Is there family, you know, is it some combination of that? Or is she going to be moving to a place? I make that decision. I make that happen. And then I share information with her when it's appropriate, as it's appropriate, because I'm not going to dump all of that on her and make her anxiety shoot through the roof, right? What's happening? Why is that happening? Why do you think I need that? I don't need that. I'm completely fine. And it, you can see where it very quickly turns into a thing, and where the temptation would be to try to, again, convince or persuade her that she needs help when her brain is telling her she doesn't.
So, Christy, one thing I'm thinking of is you've mentioned before how we should do dry runs. You know, if we're going to go out in the community with our loved one, do a dry run. If we're going to travel with our loved one, do a dry run. I think this is a situation, too, where you want to, maybe you're not physically doing the dry run, but at least in your head, you're walking through that conversation that you think you're going to have, and you're picturing the outcome. Because, you know, in that example, that beautiful, smooth conversation, I think if our listeners thought about that beforehand, they'd realize it wouldn't go so well, right?
Yeah. So that's one thing I am huge on working with my clients is behavioral rehearsal and scripting.
There you go.
So when they know that, you know, there are some milestones that pretty much everybody's going to hit along the way, and we know that that's coming. So let's start looking at some scripts so you can start running through those, doing that behavioral rehearsal, and you pick another person in your family or a very close friend. You know, these people need to be 100% trustworthy, right? With the same goal in mind, so that you can have the experience of, and the great thing about this is, let's say it's your best friend, right? So you're going to be kind of using the script that we've come up with together, and you launch into it. You're playing you, your best friend is playing your parent, and your best friend comes up with something that you hadn't even thought about. Like, you it's not included in the script. You didn't discuss it with me. Your best friend throws that out. You're like, ugh. And that's the value of it right there. Boom.
Great.
Oh, okay. Now I get it. So when you have had those dry runs, as you say, and gone through the situation a few times, you start to feel more comfortable with it. You're going to bring that energy into the reality of the situation. even if I have to tell this story because I have a client I'm working with right now that he had come to, I was speaking at an event, and so he was in the front row in the audience, and I was getting my stuff set up, and he just walked up and said hi, and he said, you know, I'm sitting right there, and I just want to make sure that you're not going to do any kind of role play or anything weird, are you? I said, well, I'm not going to do anything weird, but yeah, role play or behavioral rehearsal, that's really valuable. He said, well, I'm not going to do it. Don't even think about calling on me. Just no way. And I said, oh, are you really shy? And he said, I just think that stuff, that doesn't work. That's a bunch of nonsense. I said, okay. All right. So you know what? This is so funny. He went on to become a private client after the event. He was like, you're great. I got to work with you. And you know what we do? We spend a lot of our time doing behavioral rehearsal.
Right.
And he has said, I can't believe how helpful this is. This is amazing. So, you know, sometimes even if we kind of have our mindset on something that we don't think is going to be helpful, just give it a try and see. Because at the very least, like we're telling you what doesn't work. So you know what to avoid. So try some of the things that we recommend that will be more helpful. And that is a really good one. I'm glad you brought that up, Mike.
I totally agree. I think it can be used in so many things in life, well beyond this topic. So to our listeners, I know there's a lot of different scenarios, and there's no way we can cover all those scenarios, of course. So you probably might have questions specific to your situation. So please never hesitate to reach out to us, leave a comment on the bottom of the show notes. And, you know, Christy and I will do our best to get back to you and answer it. I know, Christy, you're doing some Facebook Live now. Maybe that might be a place that, you know, is good for our listeners as well.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. I do those every Tuesday. So it's either at 9 a.m. Pacific or 1 p.m. Pacific, but it's posted usually a few days in advance. So you can post questions there. Absolutely.
Great, great. So, all right. Well, Christy, thanks again for another wonderful episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa.
Thank you.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Be sure to check out the show notes for any mentioned resources or links at togetherinthis.com/episode57. Bye now. You've been listening to the Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.